I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, the search for a church for the first family. We'll have a conversation with a local pastor about the Obama family's visit to his house of worship. That's our Faith Matters conversation, and that's in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for our weekly political chat, and what a week it's been. The new president and his team have made dramatic moves to signal a break with the Bush administration. But with a recession, two wars, and the crisis in the Middle East still on the front burner, is the new administration moving too fast or not fast enough? To talk about all this, we've called in our diverse roundtable of analysts who we've been turning to throughout the election year. From the New York Bureau, Pamela Gentry, senior political analyst and blogger for Black Entertainment Television, and Marcus Mabry. He's international business editor for the New York Times. And here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio, Abdurrahim Fukara. He's the Washington Bureau Chief of Al Jazeera International. I welcome you all back. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michelle. Pleasure.
Good to be here.
So much to talk about. I just wanted to begin, if I could, and ask each of you what's your takeaway moment from this week. If Abdurrahim, let me ask you to start. What's the thing you're going to take away from this week?
Well, the inaugural speech was absolutely amazing for me. What I took from it, coming from a part of the world that runs on oil exports, is basically what he said about the issue of energy. And I found the speech in that particular instance a very strange and interesting amalgam of Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. Jimmy Carter in 1979 told Americans, look, this whole issue of oil and energy, we better do something about it, and the days ahead are not particularly rosy. He lost the election. Reagan told them at that time, look, our best days are ahead of us. Go and consume oil. Don't worry about it. And I think Barack Obama, in his speech, he tried to strike an interesting balance between the two. He warned about the issue of energy, but he said, if we do something about it, he was very optimistic, if we do something about it, our best days are yet ahead of us.
Okay, well, we'll play a little bit from the speech in just a few minutes, but first I want to hear from everyone else. Pam, what about you? What's your takeaway?
I think my takeaway from the speech was that he really gave a strong speech, a commander-in-chief style speech, but he was very humble. He was not arrogant. He was not forceful in the sense that I'm telling you or talking down to the listeners abroad. And I think that he was the first to ever mention, you know, the Muslim community and to talk to the rest of the world in his speech. But I didn't think he looked weak or looked as if he was being placating, you know, to them.
Okay. Marcus, what about you?
Well, in the inaugural speech, I thought it was extraordinary. I thought it was an extraordinary work because I felt, you know, most impressive to me is the fact that, you know, he alluded to the fact that he was African-American, that he was Black, that this was a historical moment two or three times, but he did not dwell on it. You know, if you look at the speech, with the exception of when he said that I think he said 40 years ago. He said 50 years ago. He said his father would not have been able to eat at some places in our country, when in fact it was only 40 years ago his father would not have been able to eat at some places in our country. But other than that line, a white president could have given that speech. And that was extraordinary to me. I think it really points out kind of who Barack Obama is. We're going to be talking a lot about this historic moment, this Black American, this Black president for the next 4 or 8 years. He won't be talking about that very much. He's going to be talking about the issues he was talking about, and he's going to be harkening back to how just by him being up there, that was the message about Black and white and America's moving on. The deeper message, he said, you know, he didn't have to elaborate on that any greater. The deeper message was that if we could conquer our history and put him on that stage, then that meant America was up to the challenges before us. And that was really strong, I thought. It was not a Martin Luther King-like speech. It was not incredibly emotional. It was incredibly cerebral in many ways. It was exactly, I think, the kind of president Barack Obama is going to be. And that's what really struck me from the speech. If I could just really quickly say, what struck me from the week, though, was the do-over. The do-over of the oath of office.
I agree.
It was extraordinary because, look, I would just compare it. Compare it to George W. Bush's coming to office. George W. Bush, after his first inauguration, he had lost the popular vote. He had been put there by a decision of the Supreme Court into the presidency of the United States. It was a decision that had only gone his way by one vote on the Supreme Court. And yet, George W. Bush's line from day one was, I am legitimate. You will not question my legitimacy of being in this office because of one transposed word in an oath that is not crucial to the president becoming president, because the president is president on 1201 of January 20th, according to our Constitution. The Democrats redid it. Obama redid it so that there would be no doubt.
How do you interpret that decision? Some people are saying that he was paying too much attention to the blogosphere. Other people say, well, it was his White House counsel, Greg Craig, said it was out of an abundance of caution. How are you reading that decision to do it over?
I read it in two ways. Number one, on the positive side for the administration, I think it's they understand the power of the blogosphere. They understand the power of perceptions, number one. And so that would be in their favor. On the negative side, however, I would say, you know, if we may be looking at administration, and it's really obvious, it's early days when we often do this, and I don't mean to be guilty of this, deciding what, you know, the future is going to hold after just 3 days of administration. However, what we have to be on the lookout for is if we're going to see an administration that is characterized by an overabundance of caution. I mean, that could be a problem, because the Republicans are looking for blood, and we see it in the economic stimulus plan that they are increasingly criticizing.
But you could argue, why not spend 10 minutes to take something off the table? I mean, give me a break. Well, so the guy runs over in a Lincoln Town Car and puts his robe on, and you spend 10 minutes to sort of silence some chatter. Why not? But if you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're speaking with Pam Gentry, Abdulrahim Fukara, and Marcus Mabry about this week in politics. Several of you mentioned the president's comments in his inaugural address that spoke directly to the Muslim world. I just want to play a short clip, and here it is.
To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward, based on mutual interest and mutual respect. To those leaders around the globe who seek to sow conflict or blame their society's ills on the West, know that your people will judge you on what you can build, not what you destroy. To those who cling to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, know that you are on the wrong side of history, but that we will extend a hand if you are willing to unclench your fist.
Abdulrahim, how were these comments reported, and how were they received?
They were extensively reported, and they were amazingly received. I was just reading a quote from Tony Blair in the latest issue of Foreign Policy magazine. And according to that, Tony Blair, 4 years ago, went to Pakistan to talk to the General Pervez Musharraf, who was president at that time. And he said, how can we in the West help Pakistan? And reportedly, Musharraf said, solve the issue of Palestine. And I think that is really the crucial issue that Barack Obama is going to face in dealing with relations with the Muslim world. The issue of Palestine is so crucial in the Muslim psyche, and it's so crucial. It's going to be so crucial in anything that he does to deal with the Muslim world. And it's ironic that a man who spent weeks and weeks and weeks talking about the economic situation, the economic crisis here in the United States, suddenly one of the very first things that he did when he assumed office was to talk to the leaders in the Middle East about the issue of Palestine, because what happened in Gaza just put the issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict front and center before him. But it is, as I said, it's going to be, and it has always been, front and center in the awareness of Muslims as to what they do with the West, and particularly the United States.
Marcus, I'm going to come to you next, because I want to ask if you feel that the president has said enough about the economy this week, given, as Abdulrahim just said, this has been the issue for weeks and months now. But, Abdulrahim, before we do, the decision to close Guantanamo Bay, one of his first formal acts as president, even though this is a long-term process, it's going to take a year, and it's a lengthy process. How is that reported?
Barack Obama has an awful amount of goodwill in the Arab and Muslim world at this particular point in time. And the fact that he's made that particular decision on Guantanamo, that's one level of it. The other level is the fact that he's appointed George Mitchell as envoy to the Middle East. The issue of Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, torture, all that stuff, it poisoned so much relations between the United States and the Muslim world. With regard to Iraq, for example, the fact that the Bush administration initially said, talked about WMDs, there were no WMDs, then they talked about democratizing the region, and then those horrible pictures of Abu Ghraib, which really made a mockery of any talk about taking democracy to the Middle East. And then Guantanamo, the fact that he's decided to do something about Guantanamo and close it down, I think it's going to buy him a lot of mileage in the Muslim world.
Marcus Mabry, what about the economy and moves on the economy? I think Adur, he makes an interesting point, is that there have been complaints that he was not engaged enough in the transition period on foreign policy, and yet in the first week, very, very clearly engaged. What about on the economy, which for many people is job one? And I need to mention, we only have about a minute and a half. We're going to take a short break and then come back to you. But Marcus, start us off on that question, please.
Well, you know, I think there's an irony here. It's true. He talked a lot about the economy during the campaign at the end, in the interperiod between his election and his inauguration. But we haven't seen the same kind of fast movement. And, you know, part of it is you don't have executive orders you can issue nearly as easily for the economy as you can for most national security stuff. But at the same time, you know, his Treasury Secretary nominee, who will probably be confirmed by the Senate on Monday, I believe it is, Tim Geithner, it was clear in his testimony to the Congress that in his confirmation hearings that there is not a plan that's been laid out. They don't have a plan for how do we get past this morass we're in. And that was kind of surprising because they've been thinking about all this for a long time. So one thought they would have maybe a, you know, at least most of a plan, most of a whole cloth.
And you got the impression that they didn't have a plan or that they weren't ready to present it for it to be picked apart in the absence of his confirmation. You really got the impression they didn't have a plan?
That may have, you may be absolutely right. Maybe they're just, you know, holding it back so that, you know, once he's confirmed, they have their whole team in line. They can, you know, with the Democratic leadership up on the Hill, push it through with some moderate support of moderate Republicans in the Senate, and it'll be there. I got the sense. I didn't even see a philosophy, though. I mean, they'd not say anything more. Geithner did not say anything more than they've said all this time. With a rapidly deteriorating banking situation of our own banks in this country, it's a problem.
Okay, we need to take a short break, as I mentioned, but we're going to continue this conversation in just a moment with Marcus Mabry of The New York Times, Abdurrahim Fukara of Al Jazeera International, and Pam Gentry of BET. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, the Obamas are in search of a church. We'll have that conversation in our Faith Matters segment in just a few minutes. And later, we're going to hear your Inauguration Day stories in Back Talk. But first, we're going to continue our conversation on the week in politics with Pamela Gentry, senior political analyst and blogger for BET, Black Entertainment Television, Abdurrahim Fukara, the Washington Bureau Chief of Al Jazeera International, and Marcus Mabry, international business editor for The New York Times. Pam Gentry, I wanted to ask you if there was any political capital gained by the president in the fact that something like 1.8 million people, you know, braved the frigid temperatures to make it to the National Mall to be present for his inauguration, that millions of people were listening and watching on media around the world. Do you think that there's some political capital in that, or do you think that's a one-day event, the sort of the celebration, and then it's over?
Well, you know, I think that it's almost a continuum from his campaign. I mean, he had 20,000 people, 30,000 people showing up at events. So I guess he had to at least hit 1.5 million for people to think that he still had some juice going on. But yes, there is some political clout there because there are two reasons. The first is that this was a very different crowd. I've covered several inaugurations. This crowd looked like none other. It was very diverse. It was very young. They were very rich people, poor people, black people, white people. It did not look like an inaugural crowd. So I say it was political gain because there were people there who probably would never have thought of coming had it not been for the President Barack Obama. So these people will all go back, because I spoke to so many people from small town America. They've come on buses. That was the other thing. I'd never seen this many buses come to Washington for an inaugural event. I mean, I've seen the limos lined up, but not this many buses. So all of these people are going to go back. And these are, I mean, those are the best ground troops you can have when you're in politics.
But ground troops to what end is the question I'm starting to see reflected, particularly on progressive circles. They're wondering, okay, we get the hope part, but where's the change part? And well, I hear Marcus saying that there's some thought that perhaps his moves on the economy are not as bold as many people would like to have seen. At least they haven't seen it signaled to this point. Are you hearing that?
I don't think he can go as bold as he'd like, and this is the reason. The reason is they're the Blue Dog Democrats that we all know about, but there are a lot of secret progressive Democrats there in Congress who are looking at this economic stimulus package, and they cannot get reelected if they give away all the cookies away out of the cookie jar. And I also see that in all of the representatives, inclusive of some members in the Congressional Black Caucus. I'm interested to see how Congresswoman Barbara Lee is going to work, because she's a very, she'll be a very different chair, because she also chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, because she too is a more progressive. And then the new appointee that Patterson's probably going to announce today.
You mean New York Governor David Patterson is expected to announce his choice to replace Senator Hillary Clinton, who's, of course, moved on to the State
Department.
And
this is another relatively conservative, progressive, new, I don't want to say new Democrat, but these are very different Democrats. So he has got his work cut out for him with this economic plan.
But Marcus, can I ask you this? Are you starting to hear from people a concern that there's a lack of boldness on the domestic policy side? And then I want to hear from Abdur-Rahim, too, just to hear your reflections.
Well, you know, we've been talking about it for a bit, since the earliest days after he had won the election, that some progressives thought he wasn't going far enough in many different arenas. But, you know, I still feel so far, and I have to say this, I feel so far we're talking about it more in the media than the grassroots are. I don't feel like there's a real political danger there yet at all for them. And it is early days still. And I think a lot of people, and the polls even show this, are willing, across the political spectrum, are willing to cut the new president a break. They realize how grave the crises are that we face, that he has the largest mountain of challenges before him probably since any president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that's serious. Americans seem to understand the seriousness of this situation, not just economically because they feel it in their own lives, but also in foreign policy, also in healthcare and education. They understand all this. And so, you know, George Bush leaves behind the kind of a wreckage in many arenas, and Americans understand that. So I think we're talking about it more than the grassroots are right now. And I think that's what that army is going to be used for when they go home, to make sure that the American people always know what the administration is thinking. They'll be getting texts, emails. They will keep technology open as a line out to the troops.
And in fact, he made a point of saying that. He was speaking to a group of White House staff when he was swearing them in or acknowledging their new roles, and he emphasized his desire to be transparent and open. Here is what he said.
For a long time now, there's been too much secrecy in this city. The old rules said that if there was a defensible argument for not disclosing something to the American people, then it should not be disclosed. That era is now over.
Abdur-Rahim, final thought from you?
The inaugural speech was also amazing to me in the sense that almost everything he said, almost, not everything, but almost everything he said was a critique of the former administration. Whether he was talking about civil liberties in this country, whether he was talking about the place of the United States in the world and its relations with other countries. But the issue of the economic crisis obviously is a domestic issue in the United States. But it's also a domestic issue in a lot of countries whose economies are tied to the United States. It's also very important because in a place like the Middle East, for example, a lot of people are watching what's happening with the U.S. economy, not just for the economy's sake, but also out of a sense that what happens to the U.S. economy is actually going, at the end of the day, to affect the clout of the United States in that part of the world. So people are watching to see how they could adjust their alliances with the United States, with Russia, with China, and so on and so forth.
Pamela, final word from you. What are you hearing on your blog? What are people saying?
I think they're excited. They're very optimistic, and they really They're realistic, and the one thing I have noticed, they're not assuming that this is an African-American president for African-Americans. They have given him the role of the president, and they're not thinking that he's here now to just serve them, that he's going to serve the American people. And I think that's probably something that everyone should be proud of.
Well, we are proud of you, all of you, and thank you so much for continuing to keep us informed. We hope you'll come back and see us from time to time. Pamela Gentry, the senior political analyst and blogger for BET, Black Entertainment Television. She was in our New York bureau, along with Marcus Mabry, the international business editor for the New York Times. Here with me in Washington, Abdurrahim Fukara, the Washington bureau chief of Al Jazeera International. I thank you all so much.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.